8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Knotfest.com presents Talk to Me. With over 300 interviews under his belt and 6 years running, your host Joshua Toomey interviews metal and rock's heaviest hitters. Follow the show at Talk to Me Talk. Here's your host, Joshua Toomey.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of Talk to Me here on KnotFest.com. As always, I am your host, Joshua Toomey, joined by the one, the only, the infamous Chris Aiken. Chris, how we doing?
Awesome, man. What's happening?
Well, you know, just living the dream. The guest this week on the podcast was Jeremy Spencer of Semi-Rotted, so make sure to go and check that out. Nice, quick, tight 15-minute conversation with Jeremy, but I got my questions out there. He gave me the answers, and we moved on with life.
That's all you need, right? There's no time for Jeremy Spencer anyway.
Jeremy,
it's your time, man. You're back.
Well, before we move on from Jeremy Spencer, but between every, he put out like 13 albums in the last, 6 months.
Yeah.
So I'm sure he was in the middle of a recording session, came over, did the interview, and then popped back over into another recording session.
Probably.
So Jeremy Spencer, guest of the Talk to Me podcast. So go check that out.
Yeah. Go check it out. And now get to the real stuff. get to your return to the metal highest points of metal, your return gig.
So I played my first show since 2009. Mm-hmm. It was a place called Dark Matter. It's in Nashville. Sold out show. I won't tell you the capacity, but the capacity was 150, but
6,000.
6,000 capacity, about 150, sold out show. It was an all day thing celebrating this club we used to play back in the 90s called Lucy's Record Shop. Kind of infamous club in Nashville, and Mary Mancini put on the event after she had me on her podcast. And if you really want to know me and my backstory, like that is the, like, I will always push people to this interview we did because, okay, you know, I can explain to you what we did back in the day, but you're like, yeah, right, whatever, sure you did kind of thing. But she was there. She saw it. She booked the show. She, locked the door when we sold the place out and people still wanted to get in. All that stuff. So she understood what was going on and had great questions. And I hate listening to myself on podcasts. And I listened to that interview twice just because of all the nostalgia feels in it.
Very nice.
But yeah, man, I'd been going down to Nashville for the last couple of weeks and doing rehearsals. And we played about 6:30 in the middle of the show. And the one thing that was a typical 12-volt negative verse show, the venue was about half full. And I start to worry. I'm like, this is going to be an okay show, whatever. Dude, we start setting up. I turn around, packed house. And then after we played, everybody left. It was a typical 12-volt negative verse show. And crazy thing, I was seeing like old 12-volt negative verse shirts that we made in the 90s. Like some of the oldest shirts, like shirts I had forgotten we even made. Like there was a good handful of people wearing old school 12-volt shirts and people coming together and just... It was awesome to see so many old faces, a little bit more gray, maybe a little less hair on some people, but man, it was so cool to just kind of see everybody back together again after so many years.
Sure. Now, how did it feel being up there, man? It's been a while.
It has been a while. My wife posted a thing about how she's never seen me smile like that. And I was like, all right. And I watched, there's a couple of videos on YouTube. And it's just like everybody's smiling. The crowd was smiling. I'm smiling. Like everybody's just having like the best time. And, show went off flawlessly. Nothing major, no major catastrophes. And,
right.
People were singing along and just a good night of music, man. It was nice to do that again.
Right. You didn't get winded from overdoing it as bands do sometimes when they come back after a long time.
I've been going to the gym, so, but no, it was hot. It was like humid and hot in a small club packed with, packed full of people. Sure. Every iPhone photo I've seen so far is just kind of foggy because there was so much steam in the room. And I couldn't believe how hot that place got, but man, we had a blast.
Now, do you think, I'm just curious on this. Do you think it was really, really that hot? like in the old days, or do you think it's just you've settled into, well, I'm in an air conditioned car, going into an air conditioned house, going to an air conditioned bedroom and repeat, you know?
No, it was definitely like 90 degrees and that Tennessee humidity outside, you know, into the club. There was a small club with everybody packed in there, and the way the club is situated, like the sun is just beaming into it too. So it was definitely a little hot box or whatever for everything. But man, if I never play another show, which hopefully that's not the case, but that is a nice bow to put on top of the musical career. And, you know, even the other guys in the band that are maybe even a little bit more skeptical on doing more shows were like freaking out on how well it went.
Sure. Well, and that was going to be the other question is, now you did it once, does everybody have the itch, or is everybody like, okay, we did it once, that's cool. Or a little of both.
I think it's a little bit of both. I think everybody's kind of in that same boat of if this is the end, it was awesome. If we do it again, it's going to be, I guess it'll still be awesome. The strangest thing, and I have yet to really deal with this side of ever being in a band, because like I said, last time I was on stage, 2009, the camera phone really wasn't a thing back then. I mean, you know, the iPhone was out, but it wasn't like as widespread as it has been. We got up there and it looked like a press conference. It was like, you know, like cell phone cameras everywhere. Just everybody had their stuff up. By the time I got on stage, I was already tagged in videos and photos. And it was crazy how quickly that stuff pops up online. I mean, if I was in a big band, like, you know, Metallica or something like that, I mean, obviously I'm assuming that they have their notification turned off, but you know, you get in a big band like that, I mean, it's got to be mind-boggling to just sit down after a show and be able to immediately watch the show, see all the feedback, see the photos of people at the show. Like, we were at the 12 volt negative earth show and it was awesome, you know, big groups of people, man. It was so awesome to just kind of see that camaraderie again between everybody.
Sure. Now, what worked, and more importantly, what did not work? What did you expect that didn't go the way you expected it, and what worked better than you expected it?
Look
at this, turned into me interviewing you.
This is where I need you on the show so you can hit me with these questions. I mean, like I said, man, I think it came off pretty flawlessly. I think, you know, I can't really think of too many things that were bad, you know.
It doesn't necessarily have to be bad, like, but I mean, I'm talking about anything, like, you know, because you haven't done it in a million years, X, Y, or Z forgot cables or showed up late when you needed to be there on time or any of that kind of shit.
I honestly think everybody was just, you know, that was even the thing back in the day, like 12 volt negative earth was like a machine, you know, on stage, off stage, you know. And like, even our drummer, you know, was smart enough to set up the kit off the side of the stage, then boom, it's on stage, and just like on stage, boom, rock, get off and get the stuff out of there and let the next band go up, things like that. So yeah, it went off better than you could expect. I mean, there, you know, a couple times, like, you know, me and one of the guitar players would switch sides and bump into each other, but it was also a very small stage. Like, sure. That's what I'm saying. Like I don't know if we do another show, I don't know it's going to be as intimate, because it was like people were just on top of us, and just every, like, I was scanning. I mean, I'm sure when I see the full video, I'm people watching as much as they're watching us. But, sure. But yeah, I mean, once again, just cannot express how amazing that night felt I walked off stage just like a pig in shit, man. Just grinning from ear to ear.
Nice. So if you do it again,
okay,
how much bigger do you try to go? Because you're not going to do another 150 seater. You're going to want to do like 500 or 1,000 or something.
So that's kind of the thought, is if we do it again, I mean, there's a couple of other clubs in town, obviously, that are a little bit bigger that we could step up to. But then at that same time, man, that intimacy of that club was just awesome for everything that we needed to get done. Right. So I don't know if we were to play there again. It was in the worst part of town. Like when they said, when I heard the address, I was like, oh, okay, that's where all the prostitutes are. If you want to get a prostitute in Nashville, it's on Dickerson Road. You know? And this was like Dickerson Road, like right downtown. And we got off the interstate to go to the show. get off, turn on Dickerson Road, and it's like burnout building, you know, just dilapidated building. And then we finally get to the club, man. So it was punk rock in all of his, in all its glory.
Even GPS tells you, you don't want to go there, right?
Like, are you sure you want to go there? You
really want to go to that address? Nice. Well, it sounds awesome, dude. Sounds like a good time. Sounds like you're ready to take it out on the road again. To me, go ahead, put it together.
Yeah, might as well.
You got all the contacts now. Maybe you'd be on Louder Than Life next week.
Maybe. Yeah. I'm getting all that together too, man. I don't know if it's like the show, speaking of Louder Than Life, I don't know if it's the show being bigger or my @notfest.com email address, but like this year I seem to be getting way more. Hey, will you interview our band rather than me hitting them up? And it's to the point now where I'll probably have I could probably put on an episode a day for 3 weeks to a month, you know, with the amount of, because some of these people that are coming through, you just can't say no to.
Sure.
You can't say no to that guy. You can't say no to this guy. You can't say, how am I supposed to say no to that guy? You know, like, I mean, today, Monty Pittman, I mean, you know, you can't say no to Monty Pittman. You got to have Monty Pittman on the show, right?
Yeah. Hey, Monty's fun.
He's on he's playing with Ministry now, so that'll be a fun, fun talk.
Yeah, but no, that Louder Than Life, there's a lot of great bands that are playing that thing. So I imagine you're going to come back with, and Art was just think of it this way, dude, you'll be on vacation until like mid November or so with interviews.
Right. Yeah. I think I have one more, scheduled, like, you know, in the studio interview. And then I've got a crap load of interviews for while I'm there. And then even like, Patrick King, if you remember him on the Drag the Waters podcast, he was Vinnie Paul's drum tech. He's now drum teching for our cruise. So I hit him up. I'm like, hey, you know, if you want to come over to the media tent, because people still talk about that Patrick King interview, because dude, that was a heavy emotional interview.
Yeah, I remember
and,
that.
And someone just talked about it the other day when I put out the Art Cruise thing. And so I was like, dude, if you're around and you come over to the media tent, you know, jump on the show, we'll do something real quick or something. But, you know, definitely got to have him on. I'm sure Jose Mang, it'll be around. You got to, you know, grab him for a few minutes. And
sure.
And so, yeah, it's going to be fun, man, to kind of see what I get out of this. You know, I went and rented a nice camera, you know, to take it there and get some nice video for everybody. This will be the first year doing video at Louder Than Life. Every other year, it's just been audio. But this year, stepping my game up, man.
Look at that. Now, you're not going to do it with shitty audio, though, are you? You're going to have like a good mic at least.
Oh, yeah, I can. I'm good. I already rented the camera, like I told you earlier. So I've got a couple of things here I'm going to attempt to hook to it to see what the audio sounds like that way. I also rented these like the little, what do they call
lavaliers?
Lavaliers. Yeah. So we can just put them on and see how those go, you know, so I can talk with my hands like I normally do. So, nice. Everything else going good with you, sir?
Not as busy as you, apparently. Jesus Christ.
It's been a mess.
Turning back into a rock star. Jesus.
Yeah, it's been something, man.
I'll be the lowly peon on the show here before long. I'll just be like the janitor that shows up, gets thrown a bone every once in a while.
No, I'd say, Chris, you will always be number one in my heart.
Oh, stop.
Well, all right, man. Well, let's start. You know, we have ad reads now. I don't know if anybody realized that last week these were ad reads that I was doing and not just
weren't just part of the conversation. I would have never known.
Yeah. So, speaking of Art Cruise, Chris.
Yes.
One of the most exciting and complete metal tours has just kicked off. Lamb of God's Omens tour is now hitting the U.S. from New York City to L.A. and everywhere in between, with special guest Killswitch Engage and a rotating roster of metal's most exciting artists, including Suicide Silence, Spirit Box, Motionless and White, Baroness, Animals as Leaders, and Fit for an Autopsy. And you can get your tickets now at livenation.com.
I must go there immediately.
And if you go to see that show, then you can also see Patrick King and say, hey, that episode you did with Drag the Waters podcast was awesome.
And I can see Art Cruz talking about his all-time favorite singer of all time.
That definitely sparked some conversation last week.
I'll say it did.
So, you know, speaking of you being number one in my heart, let's start out with a little Ozzy Osbourne.
All right.
Ozzy Osbourne sees the biggest global chart entries in his 6-decade career for the Patient Number 9 album.
Wow. Well, it's great accomplishment if you're looking at it and you stop reading right there. But then when you start reading that that's with sales of 8,000 records or whatever it is, you know, it really kind of hammers it home, doesn't it?
I don't see an actual number here, but let's go
more.
Let's go with the release September 9th and marking Ozzy's 13th studio solo album. It triumphantly sets the new career highs for Ozzy. In the U.S., the album debuted at number one on multiple charts. The top album sales, Ozzy's first ever number one on this chart. Top current album sales, another first. Top rock and alternative.
Look at that.
Top rock albums, top hard rock albums, top vinyl album, and tastemaker album charts, and at number three in the top 200.
Not bad.
And then, let's see here. And let's see. Number three on the top 200 globally, number one in Canada, Ozzy's first ever there. Career high number two in the UK, Australia, Finland, and Italy. Number six in the Netherlands and New Zealand. Number eight in Belgium, 14 in France. And other highlights include number two in Austria, Germany, Sweden, number three in Switzerland, and number four in Norway.
I guess what that proves is that even at 150 years old, if Ozzy puts out a good album, people will actually check it out.
Yeah, everything I've heard, man, people are definitely loving this album, you know, as compared to the last album. And even in the last few albums, I think this one's definitely, you know, if this is his last, then it's definitely a nice note to go out on.
Well, it's almost universally being said to be the best album in almost 30 years.
Right.
Most people are going back to either No More Tears or Osmosis as the where this one would slot next to.
Right.
And I think I agree with I don't think it's as good as No More Tears, but I think it's definitely as good or maybe even a little better than Osmosis. You know, I mean, it's a damn solid record from Ozzy. And I'm not the hugest Ozzy solo fan.
Right.
But I've listened to it a dozen times, and, you know, and I don't think I've listened to anything by Ozzy a dozen times in the last 10 years. So, you know, I think it's great. I think it's great that it's out there. And look, if Ozzy's going to have one last run, it's much better that it's this than that Under the Graveyard album, whatever that thing was called, you know, because that was a disappointment. Do we really want to see Ozzy's last go around with Notoriety being a duet with Elton John? No. And I know you like Elton John. I like Elton John too. But but that being said, do you really want Ozzy,
right,
the Prince of Darkness, to last be remembered with Elton John? No.
How many albums do you think Ozzy has sold
in his career?
Yeah.
Solo or with Black Sabbath?
It doesn't say, so I'm going to assume entire career.
Oh, wow. 140 million.
100 million is what it says here.
Okay. That sounds about right.
Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, co-founder of Black Sabbath, won 3 Grammys. Earned the Ivor Novello Award for Lifetime Achievement from the British Academy of Songwriters. Set a Guinness World Record. Claimed he has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame and the Birmingham Walk of Stars.
Wow.
Played for royalty. Even the Queen of England. So I guess at some point Ozzy's played for the Queen of England. Our condolences to all of our British listeners or whatever.
Yeah, your condolences. I could give a shit.
So yeah, so good on Ozzy.
Yeah, good on. I'm glad he's still out there doing it. And you know, I don't know that I would go see him anymore. I've seen him bunches of times and saw him in the heyday. So I don't know that I want to see him strapped to the microphone stand or whatever. But you know, anytime metal or hard rock, anything is getting attention these days and is doing well, I'm all for it. It does nothing but helps the entire scene.
Let's move on to Testament's Chuck Billy says that Steve DiGiorgio wouldn't have lasted very long as a member of Megadeth.
Why would he say that? What is...
let's see here. Chuck Billy discussed DiGiorgio's involvement with the New Testament or the new Megadeth album during a September 13th appearance on SiriusXM's Trunk Nation with Eddie Trunk. Asked if he was concerned that Testament might lose its bass player to Megadeth, Chuck said, as transcribed by blabbermouth.net, "Well, of course, we're definitely always concerned that we've had so many lineup changes, it wouldn't faze us, but Steve is an important part of the band. He was a great addition when he came back, and we went through a lot of together personally. So, of course, when you get the opportunity to play on it, and I'm sure they were courting him to join the band, I'm glad he made the decision to stay with us." Billy continues, "I think his intentions were always just, I'll go record the album, because that's what Steve does. He plays on a lot of people's albums."
True.
"So we kind of took it at that at first, and I thought, what is he? That's what he does. Go for it, Steve. Just don't leave." Laughs. "And I'm sure they asked him to join the band, and he decided, you know, I've been with my bros here for a long time. I'm just going to stick with my bros."
Mm-hmm. Well, that doesn't really sound like the shit talk of the highlight of the, the tagline. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think DiGiorgio could have stayed around Megadeth for a couple of years, like everybody else does. You know, why not?
Yeah, it is crazy. I never even thought of them to like keep Steve in the band. I always assumed it was the same thing as you know, come record the album, but he's a member of Testament. But yeah, as a member of Testament, I mean, I guess he could kind of, you know, do what Gene Hoglan just left. So you didn't know if there's maybe any issues there. Maybe Steve, you know, because obviously Steve and Gene go back years and years. And
sure.
So, you know, I don't know the friendship there. So you never know.
Yeah. Dude, Testament is, you know, it's really surprising. Testament has had a shit ton of people that have come through that band. There has been a lot of members. So them switching out members, that's nothing new. And obviously Megadeth switches members every album, it seems like. There's always somebody different in every release. I'll be honest, though, and I think me and you might have talked, it was definitely not on the show, but, you know,
right.
But we talked about it when Ellefson first left. I think we both said it'd probably just be Lomenzo.
Yeah.
I think we said that from day one, and then it worked out to be that. I think that was the plan the whole time. I think I don't know this, you know, obviously I'm guessing at this, but my hunch is that they were going to bring Lomenzo in from the start, but he was busy doing something else. So they just needed somebody to record.
Yeah. I mean, Lomenzo was playing with like John Fogerty. Here's the full quote. I found it. It was just hidden in another paragraph. According to Chuck, Megadeth drummer, Dirk, whatchamacallit, had a lot of influence getting Steve the Megadeth recording gig because Dirk is really good friends with Steve and they've done a lot of projects together. However, Billy added that he doesn't personally think Steve would have lasted in the band. "I know Steve very well and I know Dave very well, and I'm sure the two worlds would have collided," Chuck said with a laugh.
Yeah, well, that makes a lot more sense. And he's probably right on that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but hey, it worked out for everybody involved. Apparently, Lomenzo seems like he's happy to be there. Ellefson, my God, for a guy that got kicked out of one of the biggest bands in the world, he sure is busy, you know.
He's almost as busy as me right now.
Yeah, almost. He doesn't play it in front of 150 people, I don't think. But other than that, yeah, I actually texted with him just the other day. You know, my famous friends, you know.
Right. I texted with him.
I texted with David Ellefson, Grammy Award winner, by the way. And yeah, he was on his way to Italy, I think. He was literally on his way to Italy to play those shows with Jeff Scott Soto. And then he said it, well, and then I'm jumping over to Poland for 3 weeks to record the Death album. He's busy as all could be. And then I guess there's Lucid dates coming in December. So he's plenty busy, man. So, you know, good on him. There's certain bands that you never want to see these original guys like booted out of their bands.
Right.
But at the same time, sometimes it works out okay. You know, it kind of reminds me of like the Accept thing, mm-hmm. where, you know, Accept has now their version of Accept, and then Udo does his deal, and both are good. So it's like, yeah, I hope they never get back together. And I'll say the same with Ellefson personally. I like all the bands he's doing, so right. Stay broke up. It's fine with me.
the last thing on the Steve DiGiorgio thing is the bass on the new album. Is it miraculously amazing? Like, mm-hmm. you would think that he would add a lot more to it. I mean, there's really not a lot of room for him to do a lot of crazy, you know, Steve DiGiorgio type stuff.
Yeah.
But he, I didn't really hear too many things. You're like, oh wow, you definitely needed a big name for that part. You know?
Yeah. I wonder if it was just timing. They might have had, more than likely Megadeth's a big enough band that they're on a deadline once they, you know, and I don't want to say the wrong thing here because I know management's listening, but you know, the management puts these guys on a deadline because they have the whole record plotted and video shoots and everything already plotted out, you know, 6-8 months ahead of time.
Yeah.
So, you know, they may have been on a very short day. And from what I understand, it was, the album was done.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I heard that from somebody whose initials might or might not be DE, that the record was already done.
Right.
So they literally had to take a finished product, deconstruct it, you know, mix in a bunch of new bass tracks, remix it, remaster it, and then go. Probably didn't have a lot of time to do that. That's my guess.
Right. And I think he kind of came in and just plowed through the entire album too, which I mean, is a very honorable thing because that's a lot of music. And obviously those parts are not just your typical, you know, easy bass lines to play.
Right.
I'm just saying, like, he didn't, there aren't very many bass solos on the album, you know, where you would hear something and go like, ooh.
Mm-hmm. No, there's definitely not. So, yeah, whatever. I don't know. Did it's been a few weeks now. Where are you standing with that album?
I'm still listening to it a lot. The one thing, actually driving to Nashville and back, the one thing we have is the Sirius XM in the car. Mm-hmm. We've got like a Megadeth alert. And so like every time they play Megadeth, it's like, doot, and you know, pop up and you play and you listen to it, man. And like they've been playing the hell out of the new album.
Okay.
All the different singles and things and even little specials here and there. And it's still just a really, really good album.
Yeah. I like it, but I'll be honest. I've gone back and picked up Dystopia a couple of times in the last couple of weeks too. It just reminded me that I like that one a little more.
Right.
It's good though. It's not bad. I mean, look, Megadeth's on one of their high runs again. You know, I'm hoping that we're not going to get another Super Collider anytime soon.
It's just crazy that they're like near 60 and Dave's still writing and singing that stuff.
How many more do you think he has in him?
See, that's the thing with that style of music is you that has to have a shelf life, and we're watching it in real time because all of those dudes are getting older. But the thing with like technology and recording and everything like that, I mean, I've said it a million times on the show, thrash is the one genre that has been helped by production, because a lot of those old thrash albums sound like garbage, even though they're great. The songs are great and the music's great. And even though they're great, they sound terrible. And if they record, you know, you can get every single note and every single drum and just really get in there and get the sounds right. Sure. So I guess what I'm saying there is they've got maybe a little bit more of a shelf life because of the recording technology, but I don't know how that translates to live. And, you know, what, three of the four big four bands of all, you know, the singers of all had neck surgeries and, you know, we're watching our heroes age, and I don't know how gracefully they're so we'll see how many more albums they have in them.
You know what's interesting though about the big four, if you look at that though, all four of the big four never really had the sound like the voice go bad or anything. And I know they've had guys in and out, but if you think about it, Het still sounds pretty good. Araya sounded like Araya all the way till the end.
Right.
Joey sounds great still. I think Joey sounds better than he did in the day, honestly, because he's a little deeper, sounds a little better. And I would say the worst of the bunch is probably Mustaine, but he also has the hardest, I think, of the four to sing with that, you know, that scratchy thing that he's doing. So, you know, it's interesting of those. We see so many other old bands that just sound terrible. And you're like, that can't be the same guys. All four of those bands still sound like, at least till the end of their run, have all sounded the same. Sounded pretty close anyway.
No, I agree. And do you know another band that sounds really great live?
No, who?
Oh, catch one of Slipknot's last U.S. shows for a while as they headline the Knotfest Roadshow with Ice Nine Kills and Crown the Empire. The tour kicks off at in Nashville next Tuesday, the 20th, and which is today, right? As we record.
Yes, that's today, as we're recording. Catch it today.
Once you hear this on Thursday, the 22nd, make sure to hit your time machine.
Jump in the DeLorean and get to that show.
Also hit Springfield, Missouri, Atlanta, Austin, Dallas, Albuquerque, Phoenix, and Salt Lake City before ending in Irvine, California on October 7th. Tickets on sale now at knotfest.com.
The only thing I could say negative about that is there's no chance that Corey Taylor's voice is going to go bad anytime soon.
Not anytime soon. And I will be seeing him at Louder Than Life. Yes. So I will give you a full man, next week's recap is going to be crazy. The whole show is just going to be just all every recap. Band I saw.
Nice.
Because you know what's fun about festivals?
What's that?
Well, there's Louder Than Life, but there's also the Aftershock Festival.
Oh, my God. There's so many. And
listen to all these great bands you can see at for one, you know, ticket price.
Wow.
Kiss, Rob Zombie, Slipknot, Lamb of God, Danzig, Bring Me the Horizon, Shinedown, Papa Roach, Black Label Society, Evanescence, STP, In Flames, Code Orange, Meshuggah, Chevelle, Muse, My Chemical Romance, Beartooth, Jelly Roll, and more. Wow, what a lineup. All hit. All wow. Hit Sacramento. It says, wow, what a lineup. All hit Sacramento October 6th through the 9th for DWP's Aftershock Festival. Limited tickets still available, so make sure to grab yours now at aftershock.com.
Get there immediately.
But yeah, I'm totally looking forward to festival season this year. The wife and I talked, I was like, we need to pick one next year to go to, not just because Louder Than Life is literally 20 minutes from my house.
Right.
So I can just go there and come home. But I'm talking like we need to go somewhere, get the media credentials, get the hotel, you know, just immerse myself in the festival for whichever one we pick.
Sure. Well, you can have it. I can't do festival. I like festivals, but man, they're just getting to be too long.
Yeah.
That's the one you're going to this weekend. Come on, dude. 4 days. That's a lot of festival, man.
BJ, who runs Metal Nexus, posted like who am I going to see at Louder Than Life? And he goes, are they going to see you? Because he's like, I know you're not going all 4 days, but I have interviews all 4 days. So I'm committed to go.
But how much actual concert do you think you're going to catch? Do you think you'll see 15 bands play, yes, actually perform?
I will see 15 bands play. I will not see like 15. I doubt I'll see 15 complete sets, but I mean, my interviews are spaced out enough too, where it's like, you know, they're all short interviews. They're all going to be like 12 minutes, but interview, you know, go grab some food, go grab some merch. You know, the Black Craft people are going to be there. Yeah. So my wife's going to be walking back to the media tent with her arms full of Black Craft gear.
Right.
And just go people watch and all that stuff. And this year they have 5 stages. So it's a lot going on.
How many bands? Is it 100?
All of them. Every band.
Seriously, it's probably about 100 bands, right?
It's
5 stages, it's 4 days.
If it's not 100, it's close.
Wow.
I wonder if that's in the.
That's a lot of bands.
Let's see if it says like a with blah 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 of your favorite bands.
It just says a massive list of talent includes nearly 100 musical artists.
Yeah, they've got the plus that this year they're doing a big push for unsigned bands, and so there's like an unsigned band stage, and yeah. It's crazy.
Boy. You know who's going to get screwed the hardest on this show? Whoever the opening band is on day four.
Because everybody's just like, all right.
Yeah, because nobody's going to get there. Oh, I got to get there early so I can catch it all on day four.
So I can check out the strangers.
Yeah, nobody's doing that. Day four, that's Alice in Chains Day, I think, right?
Yeah.
Day four, people are showing up at, I'm looking at the list now. People are showing up by 6 o'clock at night. People want to see, they probably want to see Pretty Reckless, Papa Roach, Incubus, Chili's, and Alice in Chains.
Yeah.
Everything before, and there's good bands before. That's your boy's on before that, Jelly Roll.
Yeah.
Jelly Roll, Dirty Honey's a good band. Struts, people have heard of, you know, people know. I mean, there's some good bands there, but nobody's going early for that day. No way. And I'm not telling people not to. By no means am I telling people not to. But I'm just saying, man, if you've gone through 3 days of this and then you're like crawling to the finish line, no chance. I'm staying in the hotel until they kick me out.
Check out at noon, buddy. I'll throw this out there. I don't think it's going to happen, but I was talking with Jelly Roll's management about doing something with since the Titans play that day.
Yeah.
Somehow doing a me and Jelly Roll watch the Titans, and just now we'll just be screaming the entire time. Like, but just crying. I'll just snuggle up on him and just cry.
Dude, why do you think that won't happen?
He's doing it. This has been announced. He's one of the guest bartenders that day.
Oh, okay. So
between guest bartender and his performance and all the other media stuff, because the couple of years ago when he was in the media tent, dude, he walked around with a giant bottle of, like, I think vodka. And every time he sat down to do an interview with anybody, he made everybody do shots.
Nice.
Everyone interviewed him that day. because you got a free shot.
Yeah, but why not?
But yeah, it was a fun time seeing old Jelly Roll backstage. So it's going to be fun this year.
Hell yeah. You're going to have fun, dude. I mean, just who is, and you don't have to say this if you don't want to, but who is the biggest name that you're expecting to interview?
Biggest name. Kind of looking through the list here.
Is it anybody in the purple names, or is it either, or are they all in the white names on the list?
Definitely all in the white names. I didn't put anything in for Lamb of God because I obviously just had them.
Yeah. I mean, like Meshuggah or In This Moment or somebody like that, or Ginger.
Yeah,
or...
it's all, yeah, basically all those level. Ministry. Helmet. We talked about Paige Hamilton earlier. Hopefully get him again. Chevelle. That's always a big one.
Iced Tea.
Yeah, that would be nice.
That'd be a good one.
Right? Jelly Roll. Papa Roach, probably one of the bigger names. You know, all that stuff. Yeah.
You'll get a couple good. And are you going to... All right, now, this is where we'll see if you're different than me.
Okay.
So you see somebody in there, big name.
Right.
Paul Stanley walking through or something.
Right.
Do you have it in you to grab him and say, hey, Paul, come on over here. Do this quick interview with me.
I mean, the first year I was in the tent, I did that a little bit because I that was like literally, I think the podcast was maybe a year old and I hadn't really had very many blabbermouth headlines, things like that. So it's still unknown. And so I was kind of walking around and if I just kind of saw somebody standing there, like I got, like Kyle from Hell Yeah. I just kind of like walked up to him and, hey, you know, do a quick interview. Yeah. Sure. You know, kind of thing. So. And even that's where that Tom Maxwell Nothing Face interview interview him too. But that interview happened that way. So yeah, I mean, if they're in there, I mean, you know, if I just strike up a conversation with them and say, hey, you want to sit down for a minute for her Not Fest YouTube and talk to me podcast, and you know, this is a year where, you know, I've got a little bit more behind me, so we'll see what happens.
All right, now here's the real question. All right. I got all kinds of questions.
I thought that was already the real question.
Well, that's one real one. This is another one. So you see a Slipknot guy.
Okay.
Are you automatically grabbing him up? Because now you run the risk of pissing off the home company, the home team with Knotfest.
Right.
If you intrude on the Slipknot guys.
Let's see. I think I would at least introduce myself and say, you know, hey, you know, thanks for the opportunity, blah, 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 blah. You know, kind of lay it out there like that. And if I feel like they're just kind of hanging out or waiting for something, I might try to snag them for a few minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Just curious. I know if it's me, I'd do it 100%.
Yeah.
Hey, clown, come on over here. See, not fest, not fest.
They're doing a like a whiskey tasting at a Kroger here. A clown is
okay,
so that'd be kind of cool. It's at a Kroger near the festival site.
Okay,
so you can go meet clown. So if you're in Louisville, you want to go meet clown, go get a shot of whiskey or whatever. You can go hang out with him.
Sounds good to me.
Right, that's what I'm talking about. But let's see here. You like the Butcher Babies, right?
I like looking at them.
The Butcher Babies have completed work on their quote best album to date.
Oh, says who? Which member of the band said that?
let's see here. Butcher Baby vocalists Heidi Shepherd and Carla Harvey spoke to Oren O'Byrne of Bloodstock TV about the forthcoming fourth studio album, which was recently completed with producer Josh Schroeder for a 2023 release.
Okay.
Who do you think said that?
Heidi.
No, it was Carla.
Of course I'm wrong.
Carla said it was a very, really cool experience. We got to sit together for about 6 weeks in the middle of nowhere, a very small town in Michigan, and just create together. We had an Airbnb with animal skulls all over the place, and we just sat there in the snow and created possibly our best album to date. So it was a great bonding experience. And that same exact quote can be found on the Talk to Me podcast about 6 months ago. So as I was reading that comment, I was like, wait a minute. She said that before. She said that on my show.
Nice. Well, it's been how long has it been since they did a record? It's been a little while, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been a few years. I think they were doing some singles and stuff here and there. Let's see. Yeah. The last album was 2017's Lilith.
Yeah. And then they did some singles like during the pandemic and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Heidi did some stuff like with other people, right? Like,
yeah, Heidi's guested on some stuff, and yeah, she seems to be the social butterfly of that band.
Sure. Well, it'll be cool. It'll be, I'm not even kidding when I say I like looking at them, but I like listening to them too. They're fucking solid.
Yeah. And then one thing, I'll always help promote them because, I mean, anytime I've ever asked Heidi to do anything, she's always been, you know, she was the first guest on Throwback Throwdown on the Knotfest Twitch with me. Sure. She's been on the Drag the Waters podcast. She was on the Talk to Me podcast. You know, I could, and then Carla's been on the show multiple times too. So it's, and they've always been just great interviews. So they are always welcome on the show and always just do great interviews, and people like to hear, and Chris likes to look at them. So
that's very much true.
And one last thing before we get into some recommendations, some good times and some bad times when we talk about our respective football teams. We were going to leave that till the end. So if you're not a football fan, you can check out because going to hear us sobbing over here. But,
that's right.
We always have to talk about the mighty Metallica. They've announced their third Helping Hands concert and auction. Metallica's All Within My Hands Foundation, a 501c3. I don't know why we needed that part of it. A nonprofit foundation focused on creating sustainable communities by tackling issues, including hunger and workforce education, brings its Helping Hands concert and auction back into the physical world for its third year. So on December 16th, Helping Hands will make its Southern California debut with Metallica and special guests performing in the Microsoft Theater in downtown Los Angeles.
That'll be cool. Yeah, dude, look, Metallica takes a hell of a beating from everybody about everything.
Right.
They do. You know, and I'm not even going to say that I'm not guilty of it sometimes myself. And it comes from because they were so amazingly great.
Right.
In the heyday, there's no one better, honestly. I mean, there's certainly no one better live.
Right.
I've seen Metallica. My actual count is 42 times. Wow. I mean, I've seen Metallica more than any other band by a lot. And back in that day, back in the 80s into the 90s, it wasn't a concert. It was an event. You planned for it a week in advance. You took off the day of the show, at least 2 days after the show, because you were beat to shit. And the energy was unbelievable. And I think that's what so many people hold on to with them. And now that they don't live up to that musically a lot of the time, I think people give them mad shit about it. Like they're all of a sudden terrible, which I don't get. I you know, I'm always amazed. And you see this too, dude. I'm amazed at the number of people that will absolutely shit on an album like Hardwired.
Right.
I mean, I don't think it's a bad, I mean, is it Master of Puppets? No, but it's pretty goddamn good. I mean, it's a damn listenable record. And people just absolutely shit on it, and they shit on everything Metallica does. Nobody ever think about the last 5 years. Nobody ever gives them credit for like this, the All Within My Hands Foundation, which is pretty goddamn cool of a band that doesn't have to do this. You know, they're the biggest band in the world and they're raising huge money for these charities. That's cool. You know, they show up at little record stores and play just to raise money for the record store or for whatever. And they invite as many people as can come in to do those things. You know, they do a lot of charitable stuff and they get no credit for any of it. They only get shit on now because it's the popular thing to shit on them. And it drives me nuts, even though I sometimes will hammer them a little bit too, but you know, you got to respect a band that still is out there trying to do the right things when they really don't need it anymore. They don't even need to play anymore. They got to have enough money.
This is some crazy stats. So, so we'll play the crazy stats game. So it's to date, All Within My Hands has donated over how much to critical local services and the fight against food insecurity, working with partners around the world to feed more than, and I'll leave X that number out too. So how much has the All Within My Hands Foundation donated to local services to fight against this food insecurity?
This is the third year. Or third event, I'm going to say $10 million.
Well, that's all right.
Is that,
well,
high? Is that way high?
It's $5.8 million to critical local services to fight against food insecurities, working with partners to feed more than 10 million people. In addition, the foundation Metallica's Scholar Initiative has pledged a total of $5.9 million in grants benefiting 33 community colleges across the U.S. So your number was close, but it was between two things.
Yeah, it's still $10 million that all those organizations / people wouldn't have gotten. Yeah.
Well, this is one of those things where, like, they'll post this, and I'm sure if I go to I'll scroll down in a second. But this is one of those things where, like, oh, well, why do they need my money? Why doesn't Metallica just donate this themselves or something?
Because first of all, we don't know what they're donating. That's the other thing too. If you're donating money, generally you're not sharing the number that you're donating. You know, the thing is they're lending their name to get the charity moving, to get the dollars moving. It's kind of like, and I mean, we'll talk about football later, but just briefly touching into football.
Yeah.
Every NFL team, every one of their star players is out there, you know, packing lunches and buying book bags and everything for the kids. And it's almost always unsung except for 6 seconds of an intro back into the game. They say, hey, here's Derrick Henry, you know, buying school lunches for the XYZ school of downtown Nashville. You know, it's not the whole picture. If Derrick Henry's doing that, he probably also has thrown in a check ahead of that, you know, just to, and they don't ever highlight that. I think it's the same with Metallica. Metallica probably, and certainly for Metallica, I'm sure some of the money they're throwing in is tax deductible. And I get that.
Right.
You make $1 billion. Yeah. You want to keep as much as you can. So, you know, look, I think it's honorable what they're doing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, in the end, we're not hearing about any other bands doing that.
You know what's not honorable about this, though, is the blabbermouth comments went a different direction than I thought. So obviously it's the Metallica's Helping Hands concert and auction.
Mm-hmm.
First comment. just don't ask Junior for a helping hand. And this one says helping hands. David Ellison weighs in.
Oh, Jesus.
Maybe Dave Ellison can lend a helping hand and Dave Mustaine can provide alpha male service for this charity event. This one just says in quotes, all within my hands, said by David Ellison. So wow. Blabbermouth, the Blabbermouth comments did not disappoint with the,
of course not.
Obviously the helping hands, segment of the population.
Yeah. Apparently if you mention a hand anymore, it comes with the word Ellison.
Oh, that is just too bad. But yeah, make sure to go support Metallica and what they're doing. Cause they're always doing good stuff. And The one thing I always like about them, they, even though I think Guns N' Roses started to do a little bit more on this, the second time around where whatever the Hell Freezes Over tour, whatever they're calling it, playing like the smaller venues, always sneaking into the clubs every once in a while and doing a quick, show at the Metro or Grimey's, I think it was called in Nashville where I saw them, and those little just secret shows, something they've always done. They've always, even though they're the most massive band on the planet, they still somehow seem like your buddy at the bar.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Good on them. Metallica's always, the Day Before Day on the Green, the best show I ever saw in my entire life. 91. Saw Metallica the night before playing at a club.
Nice.
They snuck into a club to do a rehearsal and they just played a club. And I just got lucky. My cousin was a bouncer and he called me. It was like a Friday or something. He called me. He's like, dude, you got to get up here to San Francisco. I was like, why? He's like, just get up here. He didn't want to say, back then it was before the internet. He's like, just come. And I was like, okay, cool. And I get up there and sure enough, it was fucking Metallica. It's like, fuck yeah, that rules.
All right, last one before we get into anything. I do want to apologize to Motley Crue and Def Leppard because I did not think that the stadium tour was going to do anything at all. And I thought they would end up, canceling half of it probably. But Motley Crue and Def Leppard Stadium earned $173.5 million. According to Billboard, the Motley Crue Def Leppard Stadium tour sold 1.3 million tickets and earned $173.5 million, making it the biggest tour of either band's careers.
Wow. Well, good on them. Now, if Motley Crue could just figure out how to play well, it'd be great.
Yeah. And not have to resort to Hwang pictures on the old Instagram.
Well, from what I'm hearing, too, the retirement is officially in the bag for good now, because now they're announcing that they're going to go out on tour next year as well.
Right. Yeah. Do like a European tour and
Can't wait to never go to another. Would you go to a Motley Crue show? Is there any reason you would go?
Would you go for the
nostalgia?
I've only seen them once and it was 2000, maybe three.
Okay. Like Carnival of Sins.
Somewhere in there. It was them and Aerosmith, whenever that was.
Okay. Yeah. Somewhere.
Somewhere around then. And I, in all honesty, I was there because my friend was opening the show. So I went and watched, I went to see enough of the show to say I saw the show kind of thing. Kind of was back and forth. So yeah, I saw Aerosmith and then I saw a little bit of Motley Crue and it was fun, but, I would probably go to this if it came through and tickets were reasonable or I got a media pass or something like that. But
sure. Well, I've seen Motley since 1984. I think I've seen them 10, 11 times. I used to love them. I ain't gonna lie. And musically, I still do love those old albums.
Oh, yeah.
But not anymore. I mean, there's just way too much proof. There's too much proof on YouTube that I'm going to catch a bad show. So no, no, thank you.
Right, right. All right, man, I'll start off the kind of the recommendations of what we've been watching this week, because I said last week that I was going to go see Clerks 3.
Yes.
Went to see Clerks 3, and I am biased on this because I'm a massive fan of Kevin Smith and the Vuesky universe and Clerks 1 and 2 and everything that goes into it. So, I mean, this was fan service 101. And
awesome.
And if you know Kevin's story about the heart attack and how he kind of worked that into kind of the behind the scenes of making Clerks, the first Clerks. I mean, it was a pretty cool story about, you know, the making of the original Clerks, plus how he almost died, and kind of just, you know, put it all together. And, you know, there's some moments in there where you know, I went with a buddy of mine, and I'm like sitting there watching it, and we're both watching it. And then there's, you know, some pretty emotional stuff happens in the movie, and I'm like, can't cry in front of my friend. holding back tears, man. But it was definitely it tugged on the heartstrings and made you laugh. And if you're a fan of all of the Clerks and Mallrats and Jay and Silent Bob and all that stuff, I think you're just gonna walk out of there with one big nostalgia boner.
Nice. When does it launch for like regular folks that don't have like the special access like you did to see it? When is it out, like to the public?
Honestly, I don't know. I haven't seen. I think they only ran it for like a week in theaters, and it was very sparsely attended here for a movie that only had one showing that day. There was probably only maybe 20, 30 people in the theater tops, if that.
That's crazy. I would have thought that it would be sold out and be a party.
Well, that was the thing. Like, I didn't know if my friend Casey was going to be able to go or not, or if I was going to take the wife. And so I went ahead and bought two tickets just to have a ticket just in case. And when I went to buy it, you know, you can, select your seats or whatever. And when I opened it up on like the day before the movie, and there was all the pretty much the entire theater open for seating, I was like, oh, that's not a good sign.
You're like, no, that can't be right.
So, but yeah, I mean, it was definitely, you know, a good time. A lot of metal references if you want to go in for that. Lots of King Diamond shirts and what is his name? Elias kind of has, you know, he goes from good to bad, and
right.
Every time he pops up, he's in some other form of black metal version of himself. And but yeah, it's 14-year-old humor and dick jokes and so much good stuff, Bamba. So if you're into that whole stuff, into all that, go see Clerks 3.
Very nice, man.
And the other recommendation review I have is something you actually brought up on the CMS, was that Sins of Our Mother. I plowed through that thing quickly. It was just like, that was about as captivating and riveting as I've seen anything. Story of a woman who had the ex-husband, and she turned to, basically she started a podcast, and then she, got all whacked out into some cult type stuff, and ended up basically, having her ex-husband murdered by her own brother. And
sure.
And then they ended up killing the kids and burying them in the backyard, but at the same time going to Hawaii and having a wonderful wedding on the beach with all these smiles and shit. And you're just like, God damn. And that woman the whole time, and she's a very attractive woman, and she is just charming the shit out of the police. Mm-hmm. And that's, not to quote, Wendell Neely, but I mean, like, where did they get all this footage from? Because I mean, they have so much footage from the body cams and stuff.
Yeah.
It almost blows your mind that any body cam out in the public that, the officer involved shooting just happens to not be on, because mm-hmm. I mean, these guys' body cams were on, walking her just through the police station,
right,
with like no real threat of anything. It was mm-hmm. crazy how much footage they have, and she's just charming the shit out of those cops, and they're like, if you don't want to go to this mental institution, just don't answer the door, that shit. They're like teaching her how not to go. And the whole time he's on the body cam footage like, she's crazy, she's trying to kill me, and they're like, oh, sir,
it'll be fine, sir. You're being way over dramatic here.
Yeah. And then like even the he's like emailing all the family, and all the family think he's crazy, and mm-hmm. it turns out he was telling the truth the entire time. But yeah, it's crazy how they figured out where the kids were buried because of the cell phone footage.
Yeah.
Or the cell phone the cell phone pinging. And yeah. I guess if you're going to bury some bodies in the backyard, like leave your phone in the house or something,
because turn it off.
Because I mean, spoiler alert. I mean, then basically they realize they notice the day after one of these photos was taken that the phone is on the property in this one weird spot for 2 hours.
Right.
And then they go to that spot and then they basically find two decomposing bodies. And it's just,
they start
and the text messaging and stuff. I mean, the people left a trail. Like,
oh yeah. Yeah.
An insane trail. Like, and they weren't even trying to cover it up.
No, the whole thing about, oh, I shot a gopher in the backyard. So I was like, what? Yeah, that story was way, way fucked up. But wow, what a documentary. Jesus. Yeah.
And that was like one of the quicker watches I've seen, too. Mm-hmm. And the other crazy part is how quickly that one was turned around. Because, I mean, that just happened like, what, 2021?
Yeah, it's recent. It's recent.
I mean, the actual trial for these people is not until next year.
Like, yeah, it's still ongoing. Yeah, the whole they haven't been convicted of anything yet.
Yeah.
Seems like they will be, though. Just a hunch.
It seems like they got a lot of evidence against them.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are my two things. I don't think I have any musical things going on right now. So, yeah.
All right. Well, musically, I've got two. I've got brand new release called Iron Allies, which is David Reese of Accept Fame and Herman Frank, also of Accept Fame, as well as a bunch of other bands. Just a solid, if you just like straight up old punch in the fucking face metal, that's what this is. It's really pretty solid. It's called Blood In, Blood Out. I don't think it's out until next month, but I got it and it is awesome.
Nice.
And then the new Lacuna Coil release, Kamali's XX, where they re-recorded and re-recorded that whole album, that's their monumental piece of their career.
Okay.
And usually I hate these kind of things. I usually just can't stand it, but they took some of the better songs from there and really recreated them. I think they just recreated them the way they want to play them now.
Right.
You know, now that they've lived with them for 20 years and the songs are just very different, you know, like Heaven's a Lie, which was like their breakthrough hit. But when it was their breakthrough hit, it was all Christina Scabia was the, you know, it was all her voice with just a little bit of growl underneath it.
Okay.
They completely did that away. And now it's like you hear her. It's like a 50-50 voice with Andrea Ferro doing the Ravage Law, you know, like really bringing the heavy.
Maybe they should have had you on there.
I'm obviously ready to go. But great release. It's different. I think probably half of their fans will hate it. I'm sure half of their fans will hate it because they're, you know, when you redo anything, it's like, well, it doesn't sound like the original. So I would imagine that half the people are not going to dig it too much, but I loved it. I thought it was great. So Kamali's XX comes your way sometime here soon. And it seems like they've been promoting that thing for fucking 6 months, you know, but it's finally here, I think. And then movie-wise, real quick, one for movies. And I don't usually like these kind of movies, but for some reason I like this one. Sylvester Stallone is back on Amazon Prime in a broken superhero movie called Samaritan.
Okay.
And it's kind of, it's like a PG version of The Boys, if you've ever watched that on Amazon.
Okay.
It's kind of a... He used to be a superhero. Now he's just trying to be hidden away. So he's like a janitor or some shit. And some kid finds him and figures out that he's the Samaritan just in time because the bad guys are reforming their group to take over the world. And it's corny as hell. I'm not going to tell you that it's not. It's okay. Really corny. And some of the writing is pretty weak. Like, you know how like in superhero movies, everybody has to have a weakness.
Okay.
Well, Stallone's weakness is that when he's fighting crime, his body overheats and he has to eat ice cream and be soaked with water.
Okay.
So needless to say, as the big fight scene comes at the end, it's in a burning building so that, you know, everything's even more hot. And is he going to be able to finish off the criminals before his heart blows up from the heat? I mean, it's dumb. It's dumb. Right. And that being said, I watched it. And when it came to an end, I was like, okay, that wasn't so bad. You know, just stupid, killed 2 hours of good fun mindless television. So Samaritan on Amazon Prime, it's worth a watch.
Nice. Well, you know what was not worth a watch?
Yeah. We both felt that.
Well, I think, in all honesty, I think the way the Titans lost to the Bills, I would take over the way the Browns lost to the Jets, because I had Monday Night Football. I'm pumped, you know, even though I've been going to the gym, I was like, we're going to grab some pizzas. We're going to, you know, watch it and just veg out on the couch. And it was like, what was it, like 17-7 at halftime? It wasn't necessarily way out of reach. Yeah. My God, the Buffalo Bills are a juggernaut football team that just definitely have the Tennessee Titans number this week, man. But it was nice that it was nice. Buffalo just went in and took us behind the shed last night, shot us early because I had some editing to finish up with my Jeremy Spencer interview. So I just tapped out and I'm like, I'm going to go finish up watching this game on my phone and finish up my Jeremy Spencer video.
I'm going to tell you my game.
Yeah.
It felt like I imagine it was watching Lane Staley die.
Okay.
Wow. It was absolutely, you're excited. You're thrilled. You're everything's going right. Here's your successful friend. Just doing kick ass. All of a sudden it falls apart and he's dead. That's what it felt like for the watching this Browns game. Dude, they did interviews here on the news, and I never watched the news ever. Right. This Sunday was the first time I have watched local news in probably a decade. And it was only because I wanted to see the reaction to people. 9/10 of the people were walking out of the stadium, thought we had a win. They left at the 2-minute, like, because it was like a minute 55 and we were up 13. People were leaving thinking, okay, this one's in the bag. And by the time they got to their cars, they turned on the radio to hear the post game, and they're like, right. Oh, and the Browns found a way to lose. It's like, what the?
Wow.
What the
I didn't even
hell?
Think about that part.
It was, dude, I mean, I'm a yeller anyway when I'm watching football. I think my son probably thought I was having a heart attack because I was screaming at my TV. I was like, get the fuck out of here. Get the fuck out of here. I just couldn't stop. I almost threw my phone through my TV. I mean, I couldn't believe it was happening. If the Browns can find a way to lose, they do.
Right.
And, you and I have been throwing that stat back around, 2,200 games in a row where this hasn't happened. But the Browns found a way.
Yeah, I was like, when my show was on Sunday and we were driving, and I kind of had my Sunday ticket app open on my phone.
Right.
And I was more watching the Colts Jaguars score, just kind of like snickering because the Jaguars of all teams are shutting out the Colts.
Right.
And I'm kind of looking over. I'm like, oh, they look, the Browns are winning. All right. That's nice. Nice for Chris. Nice for my friend.
Yeah.
John's probably out there just, big football boner at the game. He's at the game.
Mm-hmm. He's at the game.
All that stuff. And did they kick do you know if the game winning touchdown was in front of John? Because he's in the end zone, right?
Yeah, he's in the dog pound. I think it might have been the other side.
Okay.
Going that way. I think it was the other side. But John, I haven't talked. Look, you know me and John, we are damn near brothers. I haven't spoken to him. He won't pick up his phone. He doesn't want to talk about it. I have a feeling, I don't know this to be true. I'll find out by next week.
Yeah.
I think he was one of those people that left.
I can see that.
I can see it too. They were up. They were up.
Didn't he go to like the strip club afterwards sometimes and have drinks and stuff? Yeah, there's like a strip club right there that they go to and sell. Mm-hmm. He was probably like throwing ones, having a fucking blast and celebrating a win. Oh, yeah, that's too funny.
I'll bet you anything he left and thinking it was a win because we were up big.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, you've watched a million football games. I've watched a million football games. Have you ever seen your team lose in under 2 minutes when they're up two scores? Two full scores, not 10.
Right. Yeah. Two touchdowns and, had to get a touchdown and a 2-point conversion to.
No, sorry.
Touchdown and an onside kick.
Yeah.
And then another touchdown. Like that's insane. And Maybe he's not answering because maybe this finally broke him. Maybe he's like, well, maybe we're not good.
The only text I got was I texted him and I texted Steph right at the end of the game. And I said, please don't kill yourselves by driving off the bridge. And I just got back a text from Steph and she said, seriously, I know. And I was like, oh boy.
Well, hopefully those guardians that are on the bridge will keep them alive.
Protected them.
Because, you know, Cleveland is known for those guardians on
the bridge. Yeah, those guardians on the bridge. Well, maybe that's why, because of the heartache the Browns are giving us.
So the day this goes up, you guys play, is it at Pittsburgh or it's
at Steelers? Cleveland.
At Cleveland. All right. So what's your prediction? We'll give a quick prediction.
I don't know, because the Steelers suck, but I said that about the Jets.
Yeah.
The Steelers are bad.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm going to say the Browns find a way to win. If the Browns don't win this game, we might as well start scouting draft picks.
How's that Bryce Young down in Alabama? The Titans play at home against the Las Vegas Raiders. Both teams 0-2. But, I mean, if we can't get our defense straightened out, I mean, Devontae Adams is going to have 500 yards and 8 touchdowns.
Dude, how in the fuck did the Titans, their prime player, their main player, especially after the offseason they had where they lost Brown, how did they not put all of their capital into making the line great for Henry?
I just think that what's crazy is our GM is a former like college offensive lineman. So you would think that he could see something in somebody, but we had a first round draft pick that played like one game. He's gone. We have a second round draft pick that he was drafted as a tackle. He's a backup guard now because his arms are too short.
Right.
Now we have a third round. This year, we have a third round draft pick from Ohio State, the Petit Frere. He's playing right tackle. He seems to be okay. But like we've got like a 280-pound left guard that's just getting manhandled. But they talked about with him in the offseason is about how gritty and determined he was and stuff like that. And I'm just like, man, this whole team is just it's funny because I'm watching the team and I don't recognize a lot of the, like, I know who they are, obviously, but like there should be other players where these players are. I'm like, where is this guy? Where is that guy? Why is this? There was an undrafted free agent rookie cornerback on Stephon Diggs last night on multiple plays that he was just toying with him out there. Whose idea was that?
but dude, you can go the opposite. You can go look at our game. Our top guy, highest paid cornerback in the NFL.
Yeah.
Got smoked for a 65-yard touchdown where he wasn't within 40 yards of the guy.
Right.
And that guy was a rookie.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter. You know, if they suck, they suck.
Right. No, I get you, man. It's just I'm dumbfounded how quickly, and it's two games in, I get it. And the Buffalo Bills are that
awesome.
They're gonna romp a lot of people and a lot of fan bases after that game are going to be like, fire the coach, fire the coordinators, fire the offensive line, you know, and fire everybody. It's going to be a fire everybody fest. I think Buffalo is going to do that to a lot of teams, but I'm curious to see, you know, we've got a stretch of games here that, you know, if we win a couple of them, then everything's okay. But right now, what I'm seeing on the field just does not look good.
Dude, at least you lost to the Bills, a team that's kind of expected to get to at least the championship game.
Yeah.
We lost to the fucking Jets.
Oh, we lost
to the Jets. The Jets are supposed to be in the running for the number one pick.
Right.
And we lost to the Jets with their backup quarterback. Not even their main guy. Their main guy's hurt.
Yeah.
We lose to their backup who's what, 70 years old. You know, with throwing to rookie receivers and rookie running backs. Oh my, and giving up 31 points.
I will say, and I listened to a little bit of sports talk radio today. Actually, I was actually just catching up from the weekend on some other podcasts, but I listened to a little bit of sports talk. The one thing that I heard a lot was actually losing to the Giants hurt more because we were winning that game and lost at the end. Like we just, this, this, game, we just got boat raced like from start to finish. So it wasn't even like a, you know, I knew we weren't winning early basically on this one. The only other bad thing is my wife's family, all upstate New York.
Oh boy.
They're, and my wife, my father-in-law is, you know, he's two team guy. Right. So he's Buffalo Bills and New York Giants guy. Like he roots for every, and like as the Bills were just whooping us yesterday, the texts were rolling in. He's like, good thing you don't play the Jets next week. You'd lose to all three New York teams and, you know, saying all that stuff. I'm like, all right, I got you. I'll see you. No Christmas presents for you.
Yeah. All right. Now take that loss from the Giants. Because that was a two touchdowns in no time. But now crunch it down to the last 90 seconds of the game.
Right.
That's what I'm feeling.
Yeah.
It's awful. It's god awful, dude. I can't think. I am the most thankful I am is that the game this week is on Thursday, because right. at least we can flush this game out and have something else. Even if it's another loss, we can talk about something else other than this game. This game is just murderous.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, that being a Monday night game, there's one less day in between the next game. So you can kind of get to it and get it out of the way. But I mean, we, you know, the Bengals playoff loss now start out two losses this year. It's just been like, fucking blow it up, man. We got to start. Yeah. We got to figure something else out, man.
Oh yeah. And real quick, just one last thing.
Okay.
A fail to the NFL. What are they doing on Monday Night Football? Starting one game at 7 o'clock and another at 8.
Yeah. That one was, I didn't even really get to see the second game. Obviously I'm not changing the channel to watch, you know, the Vikings Philadelphia game. They kept doing a split screen and I was kind of getting annoyed by that too, because I was if I want to watch that game, I'll switch over to it. But,
how about if you do it like you have every other year where you do one at 7:15 and one at 10,
right?
So that we can watch both games.
Yeah. I think I'm probably just trying something new, but yeah, and it's week. Normally that's a week one thing. I don't know why they did it on week two. But I mean, the bad thing for average fans out there that aren't in Buffalo or Philadelphia is both games were blowouts.
Yeah. Well, that's it. And it hurt the fact that the Philly game was a blowout. It was like, okay, well, this game is already sucking. The Titan game
got to
middle of third quarter. It was like 31-7 or whatever the score was at that point. And it was like, all right, I'm going to flip over the other. The other game's already 24-7. I'm not going to that game either. I'm just turning it off.
I'm going to bed.
That's what, that was it last night. I just like, I'm out. Done.
Well, like you were with the football last night, we are also out and we are done.
All right.
So that there is another episode of Talk To Me here, notfest.com. Make sure to rate, review, subscribe, and go check out the Jeremy Spencer interview. Any good interviews you've put out lately on Chris Akin Presents there? Chris?
Not a damn one. I don't know. Just go over there. ChrisAkin.net. You can find a million interviews over there. You're bound to find something you like.
Too funny. All right. So for the Talk To Me podcast, I'm Joshua Toomey.
I am Chris Akin.
And we will talk to you soon.
See ya.
The Talk To Me podcast, presented by NotFest.com. Follow the show at Talk To Me Talk. Be sure to subscribe, rate the podcast, and leave a review on your favorite podcast app to get the latest from the Talk To Me podcast.